the real question underlying everything about when we'll get a big earthquake in the Midwest again is this. It's whether New Madrid is someplace special. And over the years, earthquakes, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of years or millions of years, earthquakes keep happening in the same place. Or whether we have a fault systems that sort of turn on and turn off. In other words, let's say New Madrid became active perhaps in the last 5 or 10,000 years, and it'll die off and another fault system will pick up somewhere else. The migrating fault idea is one a lot of us have been thinking in terms of, but the counter-argument has been that New Madrid is special because it's hotter and weaker. When rocks are hot, they're weak, and hence, when the continent, the whole of eastern North America, deforms, that would preferentially take place at New Madrid. So New Madrid is someplace special and more likely to have earthquakes. So we've done two basic things. We've looked at thermal data, what's called heat flow, which is measurements of heat coming out of the Earth's surface, from all over the central and eastern U.S., and found that there's absolutely nothing special about New Madrid. So New Madrid's not any hotter than the rest of the U.S., and then it's probably not any weaker. So it tells us there's nothing special about New Madrid. That, in turn, would favor this idea that the earthquakes migrate. You know, 10,000 years ago, there were a lot of earthquakes and faults in Oklahoma that aren't active now, for example. They've shut down. So if there's nothing special about New Madrid, and it turned on recently, geologically speaking, that's in the last 10,000 years, then we'd expect that fairly soon geologically would be turning off. Now, that's all the heat flow data tells us. The other part of this thing that we've been doing since about 1990 is looking at GPS data that can measure motions of the ground that are, you know, fractions of an inch. And since 1990, the ground hasn't moved. So what we have is a fault system that we all think is going to die sometime in the next few thousand years, and we don't see it moving now. So the simplest explanation of that is that the fault system is probably dying right now. If that's true, and of course we'd need to see that for a longer period of time, then what it's telling us is that the fault system is shutting down, and the small earthquakes that we've seen over the last, you know, 200 years almost, since we had the big earthquakes in 1811, 1812, are just aftershocks of the big guys. So we call this a cold, dying fault.
So all of the concern a few years ago by this professor out in New Mexico or wherever he was from that we were
He wasn't a professor. He was a kind of
this climate guy.
Yeah. I think kind of a nut would be the fairest
way to put it. I think that's a fair way to put it, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, some of my colleagues in the news media took him far too seriously.
That was unfortunate. That whole thing was kind of silly. But it does point out an interesting question, which is that, you know, even regular established science really doesn't know how to predict earthquakes, and probably looks like there's a good chance we'll never be able to figure out how to do it. It looks like the Earth is probably too complicated.
Well, how do you feel in light of that in putting forth your findings
we're not predicting earthquakes. We're telling you that the ground isn't moving. Basically, for an earthquake to happen, the ground has to move over a period of a couple of hundred years. It's like a spring. It has to store, in fact, it's exactly like a spring. It has to store up energy and then release it. So, you know, we had a poster up at the scientific meeting, and everyone came and looked at it and said, gee, ground isn't moving. Ground hasn't been moving. The longer the ground doesn't move, the longer it's going to take it to store up any energy to come out in an earthquake. So right now, it seems pretty clear that the next big earthquake, like the ones we had, 1811, 1812, is hundreds and hundreds of years away, and it might be a lot longer than that if the fault's dying. So, I mean, what it basically is this, is the simplest explanation for why we don't see the ground moving is that the ground isn't moving. And if the ground doesn't move, it can't store up energy for the next earthquake.
The heat flow studies, I thought, were kind of interesting. Is this the first time you've looked at those heat flows, or do you have records that go back some time about the temperatures that are coming out of that area?
Well, what we have is that the heat flow measurements have been taken over the last maybe 20 or 30 years. Heat flow doesn't change very much. So, you know, they're not going to change from year to year. What these are is basically from boreholes that were drilled for, like, oil or other things. And you send, instruments are sent down those. And this, we were using a set of data that had been compiled over about 10 years in something called the Geothermal Map of North America. And my co-author, Jason McKenna, from the Army Corps of Engineers, is one of the people who was involved in compiling that.
So what you have found is that we don't have weak, hot rocks down there.
That's right.
We have
exactly.
cool rocks that are stabilizing.
That are no different from all the other structures, just like the New Madrid Fault is technically called the Real Foot Rift Zone. And there's a lot of things just like that all over eastern North America. And the question was, is this one different? Answer: if the answer is no, which is what it sure looks like it is, then it's telling you the earthquakes probably move around from one to the other. So that's part A, and part B is we think with the GPS we're catching it not moving now. And that's super exciting because in the past, you know, 20 years ago, all I could have told you if you'd asked me the same question was I'd have said, well, I don't know, there were big earthquakes there in 1811, 1812, maybe they'll happen again. Do we have any idea if they will or won't? No. Okay. Now we have GPS is a technology that lets us look at what the Earth is doing now, and that's very exciting. I mean, this is a really new kinds of things that we're just learning to do. We can so to say what the Earth is doing now is a very new dimension.
And the news release talks about how earthquakes in the Madrid area also occurred about 1450 and about 900 AD.
That's right.
How
yeah.
how do you go back and find that out?
The people that have done that have see what they call sand blows. What happened is during the big earthquake, the sand is shaken up and actually starts to spurt out of the ground. You sometimes hear those called sand volcanoes. People described that in 1811, 1812. And now, for example, if you're flying down over, let's say, the interstate, you know, I-55 down there, you fly over there in a plane, you can actually see these circles of white sand things. And geologists have gone out and mapped those guys, and they've dated them. So this is kind of a branch of geology called paleoseismology, old seismology, because the seismometer wasn't invented until about 1900, but by finding earthquake deposits, they can tell you when older earthquakes took place.
The idea of migrating earthquakes and faults that turn on or off, do they migrate in one particular direction? Will they come around again, work their way around the world, and come back to us?
We don't know that yet. No. What you can do is you can do calculations about where you'd expect them to go next. And actually, the person we've been working with is Mian Liu and his colleagues from the University of Missouri at Columbia. And, you know, you can predict what they would do on a short time scale. On a long time scale, we don't really understand this phenomenon very well. It's something that's basically just been discovered in, I would have said, perhaps the last 10 or 15 years. But we know that this is how the continents deform. It's like the inside of North America. You know, if you were here 15,000 years ago, earthquakes along the San Andreas system would look more or less like what they do now, maybe move around within the San Andreas fault system. But within the interior of the continent, you have much fewer earthquakes, and they seem to migrate in packets. So there's a fault in Oklahoma that was active about 10,000 years ago, and from seismometers and today, you'd never know it was there, but geologists happened to be looking at it and discovered that, wow, this thing moved a lot in the past. And they've discovered the same things in Australia and in Western Europe. So it kind of seems to be the way the insides of the continents have their earthquakes.
The faults that turn on or turn off, it takes a long time for them to do either one, I guess, right?
By people standards, yes. By geologic standards, no. We're thinking a few thousand years. One of the easiest ways to see that is when you go down to southern Missouri or any part of the Boot Heel area, you don't see a lot of topography. You don't see, it's flat. You don't see much in the way of structures that are formed along the fault. So that kind of tells you this fault has not been doing its thing for very long. And the best guesses are now within the last 10,000 years, probably even more recently than that.
Would a rise in temperatures indicate that it was turning itself back on?
I don't know if we'd see a rise in temperatures. What I would expect to see more was motion starting. temperatures change slowly in the Earth. So you can imagine a scenario in which, let's try it the other way, some other fault system like the Wabash Fault System in southern Indiana was starting to become active. And I think the way we would see that is we would see the ground deforming, and then, you know, over hundreds of years, this motion would build up on either sides of the fault, so it's like storing energy in the spring, and then it would come out in a big earthquake. And we can see that on other fault systems around the world, like in, for example, in the Salt Lake Valley in Utah, which is moves also very slowly, but we can see the ground moving as it stores up energy for future earthquakes.
Well, what kind of a response did you get when you presented this paper out in
San Francisco? I think most people thought it was a pretty sensible idea, because I think this migrating earthquakes thing has been kind of growing in people's consciousness over about the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, it's already basically the way the Australians think of Australian deforming, the way the Europeans are, and we're starting to think that way. So I think people found it a pretty reasonable idea. It's one of these concepts that, you know, everyone says we're just going to have to wait and see if the ground continues not moving. But I think most people accepted my basic premise, namely, the longer we see the fault not moving, the more likely it is that it's dying now. And the other key part of the argument, also people seem very comfortable with, that most of what we're seeing now, the small earthquakes that we still see in the Midwest in the New Madrid system, are probably aftershocks. So that was my idea of a fault that's dying or turning off. It's not dead yet. But I wouldn't expect to see large earthquakes out of it again in the future for a very, very long time, unless something dramatic changes.
The idea that we're still having aftershocks almost 200 years after the big quake at New Madrid is kind of surprising to me.
Actually, it is, but when you think about the physics of rocks, it isn't. Okay? We believe that the length of a sequence in aftershocks depends on depends inversely, in other words, the opposite sign, as opposite direction, as to how rapidly you load a fault. In other words, if you load, that is, you put force on a fault rapidly, like the San Andreas, and then that will give you earthquakes and short pulses of aftershocks the last 20 or 30 years, maybe. There's already the rock mechanics theory, faulting theory, tells us that the longer we would expect longer sequences of aftershocks in the mid-continent. In fact, I actually had someone else came to me 2 years ago, just after we'd written a paper and submitted it to a journal, arguing this, and he said, "Hey, I want to tell you a really neat theory I've got. Namely, I think the reason we have all these earthquakes at New Madrid is because they're aftershocks of 1811, 1812. And this guy's a sharp guy who's one of our rivals, and this was a rare time when I said, "Well, I'm glad you weren't here 6 weeks ago, because we already just sent that into a journal."
So should I, from a practical standpoint, if I live down in the southeast Missouri, should I cancel my earthquake insurance?
I doubt you'd collect on your earthquake insurance in general. Remember, there's a deductible on the thing. So I would say in general it's probably not a great bet, unless you've got an incredibly expensive home. Because, you know, you have to get over it. You're typically about 15% or something to collect. I think the further north you got in Missouri, the less prone I'd be to buy it.
Why keep it?
Yeah, I would keep it. I think the thing to think in terms of is this, and I just about all my colleagues in Missouri, most of my colleagues agree with this. You've got a moderate earthquake hazard. It's not California. It's not even Seattle or something like that. It's a moderate hazard. It's there. There are things that one should probably do, but I don't think one needs to think in terms of some catastrophic event happening anytime soon. I think one basically wants to think in terms of preparing for small earthquakes that might happen close is perhaps the best thing, especially if you live down in the further south you get in the state, the more active area. So I would say to put it at a moderate hazard. I mean, remember that even nationally, you know, more people are killed by skateboards than by earthquakes. I mean, earthquakes kill on average about 10 people a year in the United States, and very little of that danger is in the Midwest. So think of it as a moderate earthquake risk, much less than flooding or tornadoes or something like that, but still there.
You compare New Madrid with the eastern United States. Other than the New Madrid quake, When was the last time there was a major earthquake in the eastern part of the country that you compare it to?
We don't have a direct comparison. Something we you know, we think in terms of possible places, like you know, perhaps the Charleston, South Carolina, is considered the other prime area. I think that's 1882, but I should probably remember that number, but I don't, because I haven't been thinking about Charleston recently. The last, New Madrid had, you know, these large earthquakes in 1811, 1812. These are kind of like magnitude 7 earthquakes, which is quite respectable. Since then, at New Madrid, we haven't had much of anything. We had about a magnitude 5.5 in 1968, which didn't do any particularly serious damage, but did some minor damage over a reasonably large area in southern Illinois. So the way to think about it is that, you know, we have these big earthquakes maybe once every 500 or 1,000 years on average. You know, at least if things continue, my suspicion is they probably won't. We have a magnitude 6 about every 150 years, and we have magnitude 7 about every... magnitude 6 every 150 years, and magnitude 5 about every 15 years. So it's typically in the Midwest, earthquakes are much more of a nuisance than a hazard, but the hazard is the possibility that big ones might recur. I don't think it's a very large hazard, but it's still a hazard.
I assume you're going to be continuing your research and continue to watch this whole area.
We've been looking at a variety of aspects of this problem since about 1990. And what we've done is we've looked at GPS data, we have looked at the heat flow data now, we've looked at earthquake data, and then we've spent a lot of time trying to assess the hazard, to try to understand, you know, what goes into hazards maps and what level of construction makes sense. So, yeah, I envision this as kind of a long-term project.